Show me the money.
This is the Money Web Be a Better Investor podcast, picking the brains of professional investors on their investment strategies, successes, and mistakes. Your host, Rake Fanica.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Be a Better Investor podcast. My name is Rake van Niekerk, and in this podcast series, I speak to leading professional investors about their investment journeys. We look at their first investments and how their investment strategies have changed over the years. We also take a peek into their personal portfolios to see whether they practice what they preach. And the idea is to identify a few golden nuggets of wisdom to help young amateur retail investors to become better investors. My guest today is Tato Masego. He is currently a portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. He has been in the industry for more than a decade and also had stints at Credit Suisse and BNP Paribas. He's also had some very interesting jobs over his during his younger years, including being a casino dealer, English teacher, lecturer, and a film producer. He holds an honors degree in economics from the University of Cape Town, and he also holds the CFA and CAIA designations. Tato, thank you so much for your time today. But listen, we need to start with your job as a dealer in a casino. Tell us the story.
Well, good afternoon, Rake, and good to be with you today. The story behind that was it was a sort of summer job in between years at university. And so I was a dealer at a casino in Nevada in the US. And this just so happened to coincide with the subprime market bubble just prior to the crash. So clearly it was quite an exuberant period, and you see quite a lot of interesting and strange behavior from people when, you know, essentially everyone feels that things are good, money is easily available, and people are quite optimistic. So it was really an eye-opening experience just to understand more around the psychology of how people interact or behave with money.
Yeah, it's an interesting, I think, industry, very, very far removed from the investment world. So let's go back. Tell us, where do you come from and when were you first exposed to the investment world?
Well, I'm Joburg born and bred. So I was born in Soweto and I grew up largely in Bryanston for most of my childhood. My parents are doctors, and I'm the eldest of three siblings. So that's my personal background. In terms of my first exposure to the investment industry, that would have been when I was 7 years old. My father took out a few unit trust policies in my name. I believe they were with Stanlib in terms of the fund manager. And what was interesting there was, you know, they would, in those days at least, they would send you, you know, actual letters addressed to yourself. And being a 7 year old and receiving a formal letter, I felt very important. And so I took the time to actually read the letters, which with hindsight was actually a good idea because it gave me a bit of, I suppose, background and understanding of, you know, how this thing called the economy works and what an investment actually is. So that was probably my first exposure
to the industry. But nobody reads those letters. They're highly technical and full of legalese. What value did you derive from those?
Well, like I said, I was 7 years old, so I didn't really know much better. And you do get some courtly commentary in the letters. So you pick up a thing or two. It's not, you know, I wouldn't say that I understood exactly what was going on in terms of how the funds were managed. But you do get a sense of, well, there's something called the economy and it changes over time. And money is supposed to grow over time. You know, I think those are probably some of the underlying concepts. But the technical jargon definitely went over my head. But, you know, being very young and eager and feeling important because I had this, you know, lovely letter addressed to me, I took the time to try and read it. So I guess it was fortuitous in a sense.
Yeah, that's a cool story. And you went on to study economics. Why economics?
Well, good question. I think I had an interest in understanding the way the economy and society in general works. And, you know, the economy and society is just an agglomeration of individuals and organizations, and they all have their own, I guess, interests and behaviors, and that's really where we, which sort of decides how the broader picture works. And so I think social sciences, broadly speaking, and I consider economics and finance to actually be social sciences, which most people think of them more as physical sciences, which I think is a bit short-sighted, because essentially you're dealing with choices made by human beings, and those choices are very unpredictable in certain cases. So I began by studying what's, I guess, traditionally called PPE, politics, philosophy, and economics. So that, I think, gave me somewhat of an understanding of human behavior, and I'd like to believe it's helped me in my journey since then.
Now, we'll speak about human behavior because it has a significant field of study in the investment world as well. But when did you pursue or decided to pursue a career in the investment world?
Well, I think towards the end of my high school days, I started reading quite a few economics books. So at that point, you start to obviously think of what you want to do, when you get to university. And I didn't have a clear idea. I mean, there were certain things I enjoyed. I enjoyed writing. So I was actually a budding author or poet in my school days. I also enjoyed just general reading and trying to get a sense of how the world works, which is why I went to social sciences route. But during, I guess, part of that journey, I came across a few economics and investments book. Probably the first one I read was George Soros's book, The Alchemy of Finance. And I found that very, very interesting, just in terms of the way, obviously, Mr. Soros is, a legendary investor, but how important the behavioral aspect of his approach was, which he calls, reflexivity. And, he would keep, sort of daily journal where he would, not note down, the sort of decisions he made. And when he'd go back and see, oh, I actually think I made a wrong decision, how he changed that. So that probably started to veer me towards the investment industry. And then in first year, when I was actually studying, a very good friend of mine sent me a copy of Ben Graham's The Intelligent Investor. And that probably cemented my thinking of, I probably want to end up in this industry, although I still have interests in other areas like economics, broadly speaking, and history, politics, and so on. But I kind of knew after I read that I'm probably going to see myself, in the investment industry. So I guess luckily, those books kind of pushed me into that journey at an early age.
That is heavy reading for a first year student. And I think, many people, in the first year would have other things on their mind. So while you were reading those books, did you get your juices flowing with you trying to understand that there could be a living in this industry, or you can make a living in this industry going forward? When did that brain of yours switch from, say, economics to investments?
Well, that is a good question. I must say there was obviously recreational activities as well during the university years, but luckily there was, a lot of reading as well. I think the switch became when one has to consider maybe more practically, what sort of job you're going to take, after university. And what I liked about investments was, or at least my perception at the time, was you're largely reading and thinking and coming up with ideas on, how to make investment decisions. It didn't involve necessarily, for instance, entrepreneur, which is something a lot of students, think of or aspire to do. So I thought, well, being an entrepreneur is probably a lot more difficult than being an investor. That was my perception. And you've got to do a whole lot of other things. Whereas as an investor, it's a lot of it has to do with your cognitive ability. And I felt confident in that aspect of myself. I wasn't sure if, I was going to be able to, run around and try and start a business from scratch, make a product and so on. And so that kind of led me to think this is probably going to be a good space for me.
Tell us about your first investments you have made. Can you remember what was the first investment you have made with money you have earned?
Well, with money I've earned is maybe different, but the first investments I made were probably at university. I was buying shares of Sasol and an MTN. That was my parents' money, not mine. But I asked them if I asked my father if he wouldn't mind lending me some money to make this investment. And I think the reason I chose MTN and Sasol at the time, it was the commodity cycle was in full swing during the noughties, and so I guess just general energy demand and growth in emerging markets seemed like a fairly something that was going to continue for some time. So Sasol made sense from that perspective, and MTN. At the time, they were expanding, into Nigeria and out of South Africa generally. So, I think I'd read a book called, I think it was Africa Rising or a similar book, just talking about, the future growth potential of Africa. So just from a macro perspective, those two investments seemed to be, a good decision at the time with the knowledge that I had at the time.
Yeah, both those companies performed really, really well. Sasol and MTN went through aggressive growth, growth cycles, but both of them also are facing headwinds currently. When did you get out of those investments? At a high, or were you still, having some pain?
Well, those ones, I think MTN, I think I made a little bit of money on. Sasol, I don't think I made as much money. I probably held on for a bit too long. And post the GFC, there was some contraction in oil prices. So I guess one out of two is not too bad, I think.
And then your investment approach, how did you approach it? And maybe start off with, why did you start to invest at such an early age? What was your goal then?
Well, I think the goal was probably more just knowledge and just trying to understand how investments work, how to actually go about, researching a business. So I think obviously, in the back of your head, you think, well, this could, make a significant amount of money, and you hope so. But I think that was probably part of the reason for the initial investments. In terms of my investment approach, it's probably evolved over time, and it would have been influenced by, I guess, experiences, but also, different places that I've worked. I'd like to believe that, I'd like to say that, I'm someone who's perhaps a bit more style agnostic, whereas historically I probably, had at various points a value bias, a quality bias. And the reason I would say style agnostic is that I think markets are adaptive, and different cycles are driven by different factors. So, you typically have some secular themes, maybe some disruptive themes, that underpin an economic cycle. And at different points in that cycle, different styles are going to do well as well. So, it's not that, I think I can time, the market, but I try to be cognizant of, where we are in the world and, where we may be going. So yeah, style agnostic is kind of how I like to think of things. But at various points, I've had, like I said, I was probably a value investor at some point, and that had obviously the Graham and Buffett influence, quality as well, and to some extent growth as well. So I've had a bit of an evolution in that sense.
Yeah, that is very, very interesting, because Warren Buffett would tell you, my strategy is fire and forget. So buy a share and hold it forever. And Graham is maybe slightly more, flexible in many ways. But it's difficult to define a style, because sometimes you would read a website like MoneyWeb or any of the financial websites and see, maybe, listen, we see the copper price is down, for example, but there could be a massive increase in demand for copper in 5 to 10 years, which would obviously move the price. And, do you take a decision based on that prospect, or do you keep with your existing, commodity stocks if you have it in a portfolio? So how would you approach that type of scenario?
I mean, that's a good question. And, it kind of follows on from, your prior question on styles and beliefs. We all have, I guess, a set of beliefs of how the world works. And, you have to be you know, to an extent driven by that, you know, so partly, you know, your circle of competence, what you feel, you know, you can understand and assess, and that determines the difference between, you know, investing and speculating. So, you know, we always try to, I guess, stay within the realm of investing, you know, to the extent possible. But, you know, it's always about future expectations. Everything we do is we're making bets on what the future is, which is obviously inherently unknowable. So, you know, you kind of have to, you know, you can't go after everything. There's certain opportunities which, if you feel it's within your broad sense of competence or things that you or factors you understand, then that's something you can kind of look into. But you also have to be comfortable with missing out on a lot of opportunities. You know, so I think, I mean, you mentioned, you know, whether, you know, copper or general commodity prices, you know, if the price has fallen off, does that present a buying opportunity, or is there still further downside? And, you know, there's no right or wrong answer there. But again, you know, what do you feel that, you know, you, in terms of your experiences and your knowledge, that you're comfortable taking a bet on? Where do you want to take risk? Where don't you want to take risk? So I guess I'm giving you a roundabout answer. Maybe I'm not giving you the direct answer you wanted.
But earlier you referred to behavioral finance. People behave differently in different situations. That is a fact of life, and it's prevalent in every single industry, as well also the investment industry. So it's not easy to define a style. You know, I'm not going to go invest and say, listen, today I'm going to be a value investor and tomorrow a growth investor. So if you could go back in time, and you're not that old, so it's not that long in history you need to go back to, but yourself, when you were 21 years old, and you would give yourself advice as to what style to adopt, what advice would you give yourself?
So would this be myself today giving my younger self advice?
Absolutely, yes.
That's a good question. I mean, firstly, I think, you know, obviously, you know, having the longer your horizon, you know, the more potential upside and compounding effect comes, you know, kicks in. So, I mean, the first thing I'll tell my younger self is save more, even more than what I may have saved, and have as long a horizon as possible. And, you know, if you're going to have that long-term horizon, then you want to look for, you know, the companies that are going to, you know, do exceptionally well over a long period. So I don't think it's limited to one style, but I think definitely over a long horizon, if you can find a company that exhibits what, you know, we traditionally think of as both growth and quality characteristics, and then you're kind of, you know, doing very well. And what I mean by that is, you know, companies that can, you know, really grow, you know, revenues, earnings, you know, at a reasonably fast pace for a number of years, you know, 10 to 20 years. Those are really the companies that do exceptionally well. You know, Nvidia obviously today is, you know, the largest, or, you know, second, third largest company in the world. You know, if you go back historically, that's a company that was able to grow its you know, its revenue and earnings at a significant pace for 10 to 20 years. But not just that's just not the end of it. Also, the second aspect is a quality aspect. As a company is growing, it's building out its moat and its defensible position in whatever industry it's targeting. So your return on capital is also expanding, your margins are expanding, and as that happens, a multiple expands as well. So it's very rare to find a company that can improve in terms of growth and quality over time. But those are probably the best investments. So that's what I would tell my younger self to try and focus on.
Yeah, sound advice. Just lastly, two final questions. The first one is, what do you regard as your best investment ever, the one you are the most proud of?
I would say perhaps Sasol in 2020. So I think we all know the situation around the oil price due to the COVID lockdowns at the time. I don't think anyone could have foreseen that, you know, oil could go negative, but that is exactly what happened. And I mean, in Sasol's case, you know, there was a significant amount of dollar debt on the balance sheet, which was being funded by Rand earnings, which were evaporating because of the oil price collapsing at the time. So I think what really grounded my conviction at that point was just the fact that Sasol is one of the largest taxpayers in South Africa. It's also one of the largest employers. And it would be very difficult for this business to go out of business without government intervention. You know, if government is willing to bail out SOEs, they would definitely be willing to bail out Sasol. And then also secondly...
I just want to interrupt you there. Sasol dropped, remember correctly, to around 30 Rand a share. It was a massive, massive drop. And then it recovered quite quickly. So you got in at the bottom.
I think it dropped to closer to 20 rands, you know, so I got in around the mid 30s. So after it had recovered slightly from the low 20s to the early 30s, that's when I entered. So it was fortuitous. You know, obviously we had no perfect foresight. It's, you know, you are taking quite a risk at that point. But, you know, that was my thinking at the time. And luckily, it worked out. But you know, investments like that don't come around every day, as you very well know.
No, absolutely. I can remember Kumba also once fell to the floor, also around 25 rand, and recovered quite quickly. But yes, a phenomenal call to make that investment. And then the worst one you've ever made?
Well, there's quite a few. I'm trying to see if there's one which really stands out. I'll mention two briefly. One was investing in Tiger Brands around 2010, 2011. And another was not investing in Capitec around 2009, 2010. Tiger's at the time, and I mean, still to this day, you know, has a very strong brand portfolio. So, you know, I mean, I think we can all agree on that. And I think that time, you know, very, very healthy margins. And I just felt it was a quality franchise. I don't think I appreciated some of the operational risks which were inherent in the business, which obviously played out during the 2010s. And then Capitec, not investing in Capitec, you know, post GFC, I think I just felt, well, there's still so much risk, and especially in the unsecured credit environment, even though obviously, you know, it had grown significantly for a decade, and this seemed to be a secular theme. But I think I just didn't have the courage to go in. So those are two bad investments that I can mention.
Yeah, I think many professional investors, their worst investments were in many cases that they didn't invest in some of these really fantastic shares we've had in South Africa. Naspers is another one, Capitec most definitely. I just want to say you've used the acronym GFC a few times. That's a global financial crisis that happened here between 2008 and 2009. And I think it was one of the biggest financial or most unstable financial situations or periods we've had in our investment world in many, many decades. But Tato, thank you so much for your time and for sharing your insights with us today. I thought that there are many, many golden nuggets young investors can use.
Well, thanks a lot, Rick. I definitely appreciated the conversation, and I hope it was somewhat useful. So very happy to have been on the show with you.
Absolutely. Tato, thanks again. That was Tato Masego. He is a current portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth.
Show me the money.
That was The Money Web, the A Better Investor podcast with Rick Van Niekerk. Thanks for listening. Catch up and listen to all the MoneyWeb podcasts on moneyweb.co.za or the app. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.